Main engine start.
7. We are go for start. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Booster ignition and liftoff of Atlantis on a mission to study planet Earth.
Only two more of those left, maybe three, perhaps, depending on what happens with NASA. You ever been to one?
I have not.
You are hereby assigned, and I can get you.
Excellent.
In the front row.
Excellent.
I'm going to set you up for that.
Earplugs.
Yeah, you need them.
Yeah.
It's the end of the shuttle program is leading to a new kind of space race as museums all across our great land vie to have an orbiter.
Making the shuttles museum pieces.
Yeah, it's kind of sad,
literally,
isn't it? You know, pickle them and chalk them and let them sit there.
Yeah.
Makes
collect
me
dust.
Sad a little bit. Little bit of ennui over the whole thing. But it'll cost you $28.8 million.
Wow.
Nothing cheap in this business. NASA is going to send Discovery to the Smithsonian. It'll replace Enterprise, which sits there in the beautiful Udvar-Hazy facility out by Dulles Airport. And that leaves Enterprise, Atlantis, and Endeavor up for grabs.
So anybody's ball game.
Yeah. This is big stuff. Valerie Neal is a curator of space history at the Smithsonian. She joins us now. Valerie, good to talk to you.
Well, good morning, Miles.
This is exciting. Of course, first of all, Discovery is going into Udvar-Hazy. There was never much debate or discussion about that. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that Discovery has a lot of historical significance, right?
It certainly does. We consider it to be the champion of all the orbiters because when the program ends, it will have flown the most missions. It will retire with 39 missions, and because it's the oldest of the remaining orbiters, it has the most varied history.
Right.
It has flown every kind of mission that the shuttle program was designed to fly.
And that's important. They did the return to flight missions after the
right.
accidents, Discovery, the Hubble deployment, right? And
that's
and of course,
correct.
Docking at the space station, which was key. Did Discovery
right.
go to Mir too?
It did go
yeah.
to Mir,
yeah.
and in fact, it was the final mission to Mir.
Yeah.
It was also flown by the first African-American commander, and it was flown by two of the three female pilots in the astronaut corps.
All right, slam dunk for Discovery. That's going to be there on chalks in there where Enterprise goes, which leaves three orbiters in play if you count Enterprise. Enterprise isn't really an orbiter. It was a glide tester. But still would be kind of cool to have. It's a cool thing to look at.
That's what I was going to say. I don't think it's a consolation prize. It has its own unique history and a very distinctive history that's still ongoing, as a matter of fact. Even in retirement, it has its purposes. So I think it will be a real prize to whichever museum acquires it.
All right. So I gather you're not going to make predictions as to where these are headed.
No, that is NASA's decision, and we're waiting like everyone else to learn what NASA decides.
All right. So if you were picking, though, what would your criteria be for where you put an orbiter? You know, if you go to Moscow, I think it's still in Gorky Park, there is a Buran, which was the Soviet-era shuttle. It's just sitting there, and the pigeons sit on it, and the kids play on it. I don't know if that's the best thing to do for Atlantis, necessarily. What do
well,
you think?
We would hope that the orbiters elsewhere would receive the same standard of care and public display that the Smithsonian provides. I think that NASA is looking at organizations that have the ability to care for it permanently. You know, once these land somewhere, that's where they're going to be forever. So I think you would want a well-established museum that has a professional staff, that is on solid financial foundation, that is accessible to a large number of visitors, and a place where it will truly be cherished.
Well, Valerie, it must be relatively expensive to maintain these shuttles. I assume they'd also obviously have to go with a museum that's going to stay financially solvent for years ahead.
That's correct. Though once you have any aircraft or spacecraft inside your building and properly on display, it doesn't really take additional money to preserve it. But you would certainly want an institution that is going to last for 100 years.
Yeah, no,
or
you
more.
Know, just the air conditioning bill to keep it. Is, you know, and you know another thing, not a trifling issue, is the shuttle, it's not like you FedEx the orbiter.
Yeah.
There. It's coming on the back of the 747, which carries it across country when it lands at Edwards. So you need about a, you know, 9 or 10,000 foot runway nearby.
Easily.
And you have to get it from that runway to the museum, and it's the museum's responsibility to do that. Right, Valerie?
I believe so.
Yeah.
And the critical juncture is the distance between the runway and the hangar.
Yeah.
And what obstacles might be in the way, because the tail of the orbiter is far too high to go under underpasses or overpasses. You can't have street signs and street lights, power lines and that sort of thing in the way. So there has to be a clear path from the runway to the hangar.
There
and
you have
there aren't
it.
Many places where that exists.
That limits it quite a bit. The shuttle is not street legal. Let's just leave it at that. Valerie Neal, spaceflight history curator at the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum, one of my favorite places on this planet. Thank you very much for being with us this morning.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.